Okay, today's daf is Brachot Daf Chaf. We're at the bottom of Yud Tet Amud Bet at the Tashma, the second Tashma from the bottom. We're going to need a little bit of context and a little bit of Rashi's help. So we're going to explore the pasuk that basically obligates you to return Hashavat Avedah. When you find something that your friend lost, you have to return it. You're not allowed to ignore it. But the way that the Torah tells you that is a little bit of an oddity. It says, Tashma Vehit Alamta. And if you read the full pasuk, it reads as follows. Lo tir et shor achicha o et seo nidachim vitalamta mehem. You should not see the ox of your brother or his sheep, and you ignore it. Meaning, don't see it and ignore it. Whereas normally the Torah would say, don't ignore it. Here it says, don't see it and ignore it. Why would it phrase ignore it in the positive sense of ignore it? It sounds like it's telling you to ignore it, right? But when you read the full context, you understand that it's a negative. Still, it should have just said, how about don't ignore the lost object of your friend? Why did it write it davka in that way? Tashma vehit alamta. Where do you learn from the fact that it says, and you ignore it? Vehit alamta mehem, you ignore them. Pa'amim shta mitalem mehem, upa'amim she'en ta mitalem mehem. Because there are actually times where you're allowed to ignore it, and even supposed to perhaps ignore it. Ha ketzad, what are those times that you're supposed to ignore it? And that's what the Torah was hinting to. Haya kohen vehi bebeit akvaro. The lost object is in a beit akvaro, and you're a kohen. It's in a graveyard, and you're a kohen. You can't go in there. Oya zaken ve'en l'fichvodo. Or you're an old chashuv person, and it's not in order with your dignity to pick this thing up and be walking around with it. Imagine Rav Nevensal finds a lost pink tricycle, right? And so you see Rav Nevensal walking around the Rova with a pink tricycle. It's beneath his dignity to be walking around with like something like that. He doesn't have to pick it up. O shaita malachta meruba mishil chavero. Or when the amount of money that you'll lose per, you know, given the amount of time that it takes you to return the thing, is not worth what the thing is worth. It's worth $10 and you make $20 an hour. You don't have to return it if it's going to take you an hour. Right? That's why the Torah wrote it in that way of the positive and you ignored it, because there actually are times that you can't ignore it. Am I? Why should you ignore it? You should just say, oh great, oh this is beneath your cover, this is beneath your dignity. Deal with it. The Torah says that you have to return it. Why are you starting with pilpulim of, oh this is beneath my cover, it's embarrassing, it's humiliating to me. You have a mitzvah to do it. You have to do it. Who cares if it's beneath your cover? Right? Again, I probably should have reminded us what we were learning yesterday. We were wondering if there could be a case where honor or respect that you have to show to someone else would actually trump a Torah level violation. And we said, no, it doesn't. Because no matter what you think is important in terms of, I should give this guy honor, I don't want to embarrass him, I don't want to offend him. Okay, that's nice, but God knows more. And when he made this commandment, he thought about what you're thinking about, and he decided that you need to do it anyway. So here, when the God made the commandment of Hashavat Avedah, to return the lost object, that's very nice that you're a Zakin, and this is beneath your kavod, but God made this commandment, and he thought about you. So why don't we say that here? Here he says, no, if it's beneath your dignity, you don't have to do it. So why? What's the difference? Shani hatam dichtiv v'italamta mehem. Because here it writes v'italamta, meaning that there is a pasuk that tells you that you're allowed to ignore it, right? And you have to realize that the fact that this pasuk exists gives credence to the whole system, right? Because what do we want to say? Oh, I don't want to offend this guy, so I'm going to violate a mitzvah in the Torah because I really just don't want to offend him. Oh, well, you know, God said it was okay in this case to offend them because that's he gave you the mitzvah. So clearly he thought about this. And what would I say to that person? Well, maybe God was just talking about in a normal case I have to do the mitzvah. Maybe God didn't consider that God wasn't talking about in a case where it's going to offend someone to follow this practice. Well, then what would I say to them? No, of course God thought about it. How do I know? Because when he thinks about it and he believes that there should be an exception, what does he do? He builds it into the pasuk. He gives you a pasuk to tell you that you're supposed to respect this person's kavod beyond the mitzvah. And so, whenever he doesn't give you an explicit word to tell you to respect the person's kavod beyond the mitzvah, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to do the mitzvah. But know that when God does consider that, or when God does believe that something comes in priority to his mitzvah, he writes it. And so if he didn't write it, it means that God considered exactly what you were considering, and he believes that the mitzvah takes priority. Viligmar mine. Okay, then why don't we learn it out from here? Meaning, we just established a concept, right? That concept is there are times when the Torah is going to say one thing, and it's going to come in contrast with someone else's kavod, and you have to follow the person's kavod instead of listening to the Torah. So you should learn that out to all other things. No, this isn't talking about violating something. This is about allowing your friend to take a financial loss. That is not a violation of a prohibition. That's not doing something that's usur. That is just in the realms of monetary considerations, and you can't learn isur from monetary considerations. Tashma, we also need some context here. Here we're going to be talking about a nazir is not allowed to become tameh, and even if one of his relatives dies, he's not allowed to become tameh to bury his relative. That's a nazir. However, a nazir is allowed to become tameh for a mate mitzvah when there's no one else to bury this person. The nazir is allowed to become tameh. But what's interesting is the Torah says about a nazir that he's not allowed to become tameh for anyone. Beyond that, I should need no more elaboration. And yet the Torah says, yeah, not his father, not his mother, not his brother, not his sister. I don't need you to tell me all his relatives. Just tell me he can't be metamet to anyone, and I'll know he can't be metamet to anyone. So Rashi explains here, because each one gives you a different thing that you wouldn't have known. Right? Meaning, if you just would have said, you can't be metamet to anyone, I would have understood it. You can't be metamet to anyone. But what if you go out of your way to teach an additional thing? Right? Meaning, if it's, you can't be metamet to anyone, then I would know, no exceptions whatsoever. But if you're going out of your way to teach me an additional stipulation, what does that tell me? Ah, maybe there's a havamina that there was an exception to this case, and so you're telling me, oh, but not this one. Meaning, if you say, absolutely no becoming tameh, no burials, then I say, okay, absolutely none. Right? But if you go out of your way to teach me an additional thing, I'm saying, well, why wouldn't you just rely on the fact that you taught me that I couldn't be metameh to anyone, and then I would know you couldn't be metameh to anyone. It must be that there's actually one person you can be metameh to. And so why does it teach you father, that you can't be metameh to the father? To tell you, the father you can't, but you know who you can? A mate mitzvah. If you're going out of your way to bury a dead body who has no one else to bury it. Okay, but it also says mother. Yeah, what's the mother coming to teach you? That if you're a nazir and a kohen, and there are two reasons you can't be metameh, right? The mother, you can't. However, you can still be metameh for the maid mitzvah. Okay, but it also says brother. Yeah, that's if you're a kohen gadol. That's what it's teaching you. That if you're a nazir and you're a kohen gadol, and you basically have three reasons or two increased reasons why you can't be metameh, still you'd be metameh to the maid mitzvah. Okay, but it says sister. And that's what we're picking up from right here. The Gemara just assumes that you know all of that. What do we learn from the fact that it says sister? Matam and Lomar, what are we supposed to learn from that word? Lomar, Haresha, Holech, Lishchon, et Pisro, Velamula, Beno, Shema, Shemet, Lomet, Yachol, Yachzor, Vitame, Amada, Lo, Yitame. Right? So, if you're on the way to do Brit Milah or bring a Korban Pesach, which are the two positive mitzvot that you get karets for not doing, right? So, you might think that, oh, this is a very important endeavor, so I should continue doing it. And so, the fact that it says Lachoto, it tells you, yeah, for your sister, you do not, you're not allowed to stop from bringing your Pesach or bringing, or doing the Brit Milah to go bury your sister. However, what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to stop from bringing a Korban Pesach or doing a Brit Milah to bury a mate mitzvah. So those are the four instances that you may not have known if the Pasuk didn't explicitly add extra words. So, yachol kishem she'enu metameh lehem, kach enu metameh lebeit mitzvah. So you may have said that, okay, if I'm not allowed to be metameh to my sister, when I'm on my way to bring a Korban Pesach or to do Brit Milah, so maybe I can't even metameh for a mate mitzvah because that's how important Korban Pesach and Brit Milah are. Tamen lomer lachoto. No, it says lachoto. Lachoto ve'enu metameh, aval metameh hu le'mate mitzvah. It's only by his sister that you can't become tameh. However, by a mate mitzvah, you're still allowed to become tameh to perform that, even if you're already on your way to doing Korban Pesach or Brit Milah. Amai le'mein chokma en tuon ha'etzen neger Hashem. Why? Just say that there's no... Okay, you want to give cover to the mate. I mean, it's very disgraceful for him to be left out unburied. But just say that, I know, I get that it's disgraceful, but I have an Isser here. I can't become Tameh. I am a Nazir. So I have an Isser here, and all the pilpulim that you have about your, well, it's not kavod, I don't care, I have an Isser. There's nothing I can do. Shani hatam dichtiv la'achoto. No, similar to what we just said. There's an extra word. It didn't need to write la'achoto. Why did it write la'achoto? To teach you this exact idea that even though you're violating an Isser, so to speak, this kavod takes
precedence. And when I have an exact word, what I know is HaKadosh Baruch Hu thought, oh, if this comes in, if this Isser that you took upon yourself comes in contrast with showing the following person Kavod, you know what actually takes precedence? Showing the person Kavod takes precedence. Mashma, whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not include an extra word or pasuk to teach me that the Kavod takes precedence, it should not take precedence. V'lig marmina, but maybe we should learn that from this case to all other cases. Sheval taseh shani. Now you can't learn it out from other places. Why? Because we're asking, can you violate an Isser in the Torah in order to show respect to someone, right? But this is a sheva al taseh. This is, don't bring a korban Pesach. Don't do the Brit Milah. You're not violating an Isser. You're just not doing something that you were supposed to do. And the Chachamim are allowed to tell you to abstain from doing something you were supposed to do, but not to violate something that you can't do.
What's the difference between the earlier generations where they had Nisim? We're not talking about the Nevi'im. We're talking about just earlier generations of the Amoraim.
That they had miracles, but we don't have miracles. If it's because, oh, they learned so much more, they were holding. Whoa, in the generations of Rav Yehuda, they were only learning Nezikin, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Batra, which is Masechet Nezikin, that we divided into the first, second, and third gate, right? But we were holding in all six, you know, Seder's, Sedarim of Mishnayot. We clearly learned just as much, if not more. Ki Ava Mati Rav Yehuda, Oktzin, when Rav Yehuda was learning Oktzin, Haisha Shekoveshet Yerek Bekdei Rav Amri Lei Zeitim Shekivshan Bitar Fehen, right? Either the sugya of the woman who was pickling vegetables in a pot, or olives that were pickled with their leaves attached to them, how they're still tahor, even if the leaves are tameh. Amar Havayo de Rav Shmuel Kachazina. He says, these are like the most difficult questions in Shas, meaning all those things that Rav and Shmuel argued over they couldn't understand. Yeah, that's this case of Uktzin for me. I don't really know what's going on here. That's a little bit mizalzel, but yeah, he wasn't chopping. We teach Uktzin in all 13 of our yeshivas, meaning everyone's learning Uktzin. They weren't even learning Uktzin, so don't tell me it's because they learned so much more than we do. Vila Rav Yehuda Kiyava Shaliv Chad Nisanya Adi Mitra. And when Rav Yehuda would take off one shoe in as a sign of inui, as a sign of discomfort, meaning when they didn't have enough rain one year, and so he took upon himself a number of discomforts, like fasts and other inuim, you know, discomforts, like taking off your shoes, like you have to do for Yom Kippur. By the time Rav Yehuda would even take off one shoe, boom, it would already start raining. That was his chashivut. And we're suffering, and we're crying out for rain, and it's like no one's even listening or paying attention to us. Amar lekama, havu kamisari nafshayu akudush atashem, anu lo masrin nafshayu akudashem. No, it's because they were most there nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. They really made unbelievable sacrifices for Kiddush Hashem. Ki ha derav Adabar Abba chazia leikutid dehavet levisha karbalta. Because Rav Adabar Abba saw that certain non-Jewish woman who was wearing a karbalta. What's the problem with wearing a karbalta? A couple different potential issues. One, it could have been an intrinsic issue, a problem with wearing the thing. Or it could have been the wrong, or it could have been an overly attention-drawing color. Alternatively, it could have just been that it had its kilayim in it. Right? That it has woolen linen mixed together. Rabbi Shuka, and he saw that in the marketplace, that this woman was wearing something that was usher for her to wear. Savored about Yisrael, and he thought that this was a Jewish woman. Right? Kam kar emine. So he took the garment off of her. Achas v'shalom, she should be wearing shatnez. Iglai milta de kutiti. And then he found out that no, actually, this is a non-Jewish woman. She was totally allowed to wear that garment. Shaimuha be'arba me'azuze. And they obligated him, or they estimated that the embarrassment that he caused her by taking the karbalta off was worth 400 zuz that he now has to pay. Amarle Mashim Chai says, what's your name? Amarle Matun. She says, my name is Matun, which kind of sounds like Matayim. It's from the same Shoresh, which is 200. Amarle Matun, Arba Me'ez Zuz Shavya. Right? Matun, 200 and 200. Now I'm obligated to you 400 zuz. It's basically an expression of pain over how much money that he has to pay. Okay, a couple points that we need to make here. First of all, notice that we said that this is Mesirut Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. What's the example of Mesirut Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem? When you disgrace someone in public, how does that work? No, because he didn't want her to be violating an Isser. Similarly, what was it on yesterday's daf? We said that you're not allowed to be, you're not allowed to attain, to give kavod to a rav if it's going to cause chilil Hashem. And that was also talking about tearing someone's clothes off in public. You would have thought that tearing the clothes off in public was the chilil Hashem. Mashma, what's actually the chilil Hashem? Allowing someone to wear shatnez. And in fact, them being embarrassed in public, a Jew being embarrassed in public and not being dressed appropriately is not the chilil Hashem here. The chilil Hashem is allowing the Jew to continue wearing shatnez, which kind of flips it on our head, because when we were in elementary school, we were told, okay, we're going on a field trip, guys, and they're going to be goyim there, so let's make sure not to make a chilul Hashem. We all have to behave appropriately, right? I mean, the pinnacle of a chilul Hashem is like acting, you know, unruly in front of non-Jews. Here, it doesn't even matter what they're thinking about you. What is a chilul Hashem? Publicly violating an isser. Similarly, Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the following question. He said, if, like, oh, you probably shouldn't be doing this, but let's say you gotta run to get off the plane. You gotta catch your plane, right? So you're gonna pull your luggage bag and push everyone out of the way and knock through everyone and run off the plane, right? If I'm gonna do that, and I know I'm gonna do that, and you can tell me not to do it, but I'm gonna do it anyway, should I at least take off my kippah? And he said, taking off your kippah is a far bigger chilul Hashem than pushing them out of the way, right? As I said, you have to flip kind of your understanding of chilul Hashem on its head a little bit and understand that that being a Jew who's not gonna wear a kippah, right, or violating something in public is a bigger chilul Hashem than what other people are gonna say about it. Another point. What was the Mesirut Nefesh here? What did we understand the Mesirut Nefesh to be? According to the Ben Yehoyada, the Mesirut Nefesh is as follows. He didn't know that she was a non-Jew. He also didn't know for sure that she was a Jew. He ended up being wrong. So what is he thinking when he looks at her? This might be a Jewish woman. And if it's a Jewish woman, she's violating an Isser Deoraita. Right? But if she isn't a Jewish woman, then she's not violating Isser Deoraita, and I'm going to have to pay 400 zuz. So what is his shikul here? I could let someone who's not even me, it's not even me doing something wrong. I could allow a potential case where a Jew is violating the Isser Deoraita, or I could stop the Jew from violating the Isser Deoraita and risk obligating myself in 400 zuz. And what did he decide to do? He risked obligating himself in the money rather than allow someone to continue violating the Isser Deoraita. And that was the Mesirut Nefesh that he did. Now, we don't really have time for this, but I want to say this anyway. When the Gemara uses the term 400, and this increases the Mesirut Nefesh that he does here. When the Gemara uses the term 400, the number 400, it doesn't mean 400. It's an exaggeration. We see it by Barpada had a student who couldn't remember anything. How many times did Barpada have to teach him the sugya? 400 times before he could remember it. One time Barpada said, I have to go early today, so the student thought he was only going to get it one time. He ended up giving it 400 times, and the student didn't remember it. He says, why didn't you remember it? Well, because each time I thought you were leaving. So Barpada taught him it another 400 times. The most expensive prostitute in the world is 400 zuz. There's a Gemara in Nida that says that a person had a garment that was the exact shade of black that would be matame with blood. And so he cut up the garment and sold it for 400 zuz. And it would have been worth 2 zuz if you just bought the garment. But in different pieces, he sold it to different Talmidei Yeshiva who wanted to know exactly what that shade looked like. So he sold it for 400 zuz. In Gittin, you had 400 Batei Knesset with 400 cities with 400 Batei Knesset with 400 members. You're going to see this everywhere. It's all 400. Right? It's an exaggeration. It means a lot. That, I think, is pretty well established. I want to suggest the following chiddush. I haven't read this anywhere. I haven't found it anywhere. I haven't heard anyone say it. So we maybe take it with a grain of salt, but I think it's absolutely pshat. Right? Where does this chiddush come from? There are 3 times in Sefer Bereishit alone where the number 400 comes up. And that's an odd number to come up consistently. We're not talking about 1, 5, 10. Those are like established numbers. 7, 70. No, 400. What is 400 even doing there? Where are the 3 times? Avraham, by the swear by Kadosh Baruch Hu that his descendants are going to be enslaved 400 years, Avram by Marata Machpelah, and Yaakov, Esav, coming toward him with 400 men. 400, you can't ignore the fact that this is an odd number that's just repeating itself, you know, time after time in Bereishi, right? So maybe the Gemara gets it from there. Why? Because there's something odd about each iteration of 400. First of all, Avram was told your descendants are going to be in Egypt for 400 years. What's kind of strange about that is that they weren't in Egypt for 400 years, right? And then Yaakov is told, hey, Esav's coming toward you with 400 men. That's just such an odd detail to throw in there. He's coming toward you with an army. When the Malachim got there, they're like, oh, we should tell Yaakov that the Esav is coming with an army. No. We should tell Yaakov that the angels are coming with the exact amount of men that they're coming with. So they sat there and counted? Like, what happened there? What does it mean they're coming with 400 men? Oh, you counted? Like, you counted them out? And finally, The Chazal is so incredibly critical of Ephron Achiti, no relation. Ephron Achiti, right, for overcharging for Avram Avinu for Maratim Achpela. Ephron offers him for free. Avram insists on paying Kesef Male. He says, I don't even want a discount. Ephron says, listen, if you insist on paying Kesef Male, you should know that's 400, you know, that's 400 shekel Kesef. And Avram's like, done. And Chazal's like, what a cheapskate, what a terrible person. What story are they reading? It's not the same story I'm reading. No, Chazal was privy to this concept that what does 400 mean? It's an exaggeration. In which, so what did God tell Avraham? Avram, your descendants are going to be in Egypt for a long time, Avraham. And Yaakov, Esav's coming toward you with how many men? A lot of men, Yaakov, right? And how much did Ephron charge Avram Achiti? A lot of money, and that's why Chazal believed that he ripped him off, right? Here's the real Chiddush, though, right? Not just that it comes from the Torah. Where does it come from? Meaning, why does the Torah use 400? I think this is the pshat. Ready? What else is 400? It is the gematria of Tav. The last letter in the Aleph Bet is Tav, gematria 400. The Torah is written in Lashon HaKodesh, the highest single represented digit in the language that the Torah is written in is Tav, is 400. You cannot represent a higher digit with one number in the entire Torah than with Tav. So what is Tav? What is 400? It's just the highest figure that we know how to represent. And so in the Torah and in the Gemara, 400 connotes exaggeration. That's my Chiddush. That's my suggestion. I think it's Pshat. Rav Gidel have a ragil to have a ka'azl v'yati v'shar the tevilah. Amalu hachi tevilah. So Rav Gidel would go sit in the entrance to the mikvah, and he would tell the women how they should go about doing tevilah. I'm really a rabbanan lo come and staffing my yetzer hara. Aren't you concerned about your yetzer hara? You're interacting with women while they go to the mikvah. I'm lo damyan ba'apai ki kake chaviri. Right? They're like white geese to me. Meaning I feel nothing towards them. It doesn't do anything for me. I'm just helping them to know the proper halacha. Rav Yochanan ve ragil ke azil biyati v'ashari the tevilah. Whereas Rav Yochanan would go sit in also in the gates of the mikvah on the outside. Amar kisalka beno Yisrael va'at. Right? Rabbi Yochanan would sit outside, and when women would come out of the mikvah and they would see Rabbi Yochanan, who was such a beautiful, beautiful person, they would look at him and maybe they would have kids as beautiful as him because that was the first thing they saw after they left the mikvah. Interesting, we said just last week that Rabbi Yochanan was particularly obese. It's interesting how the beauty standards changed throughout the time of the Gemara. The most beautiful person anyone had ever seen is Rabbi Yochanan. We actually said that earlier as well. I think on Aseret B'Tevet, that was the daf, right? That we were crying that the man as beautiful as Rabbi Yochanan was going to be in the dust, right? And he was like so obese, he literally couldn't even say Shema rolling over, right? Right? Yeah. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yochanan. And he said, Lo kamistafe marbe ina bisha. Aren't you concerned about ayin hara? Right, you're showing off how beautiful you are. It's an ayin hara. You shouldn't advertise this. Amarlu ana mizara de Yosef kaatina velo shelter be ayin ina bisha. Right, no, I'm from Yosef. Yosef bnei Yosef don't have to worry about ayin hara. Tichtiv ben parat Yosef ben parat ale ayin. It's written about Yosef that they are ale ayin. Amar Rabbi Abahu al tikri ale ayin ela ole ayin. Rather beyond the eye, as in the eye, the ayin hara isn't sholet by him, and so you don't have to be concerned that you know. Showing off your beauty is going to invite something negative to come upon you. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Hacha says, no, this is how we know that they don't have an ayin hara of a yidgulur of Bekerav Aretz, right? That they will be like fish, right? In that there are so many of them, but on land. Right? How are you are like fish on land? Just like my fish which are underwater and the eye can't see it. So too, Bnei Yosef, even above water, the eye can't see it, and the Yetzer Hara, and the Ayin Hara, doesn't affect him. V'bayneim, I'll tell you, you can say like this, Ayin Shelo Ratzta Lazum Mimashe Eino Shelo, Ein Ayin Hara Shalitbo. An eye that saw, but didn't want to benefit from what wasn't his, Eshet Potifar, which is his master's wife, so the Ayin Hara, it doesn't affect his descendants. Matanit, enough to the Mishnah. Nashim, Avanim, Ketanim, Peturim, Kriyat Shema. Right, so women and slaves and under Bar Mitzvah are Pater from Kriyat Shema. With a tefillin, and also from tefillin, b'chayav and mitzvila, b'chayav and tefillah, and in mezuzah, who bikur mazon. Gemara, kriyat shema pshita. That's obvious that they're part of kriyat shema. It's a mitzvah that says man grama. Who v'kol mitzvah that says man grama nashim pturo. It's a time dependent positive mitzvah. We know that women are exempt from time dependent positive mitzvah. Why do you have to teach me this? Ma'udatema hoyel ve'itba malchut shemayim kavash malan. Because this is a kabbalat o malchut shemayim. Right, this is accepting the heavenly yoke upon you. Women have to accept the heavenly yoke upon themselves as well. They're as obligated as we are. And so maybe you would have thought that kriyat shema because of its it's Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim is relevant to them as well. Umitzvilin, and also from a tefillin. Pita, it's obvious, it's time-dependent positive mitzvah. Ma'udatayim ha'oil v'yitkish l'mezuzah kamash malan. You would have thought because there's a hekesh between ukatavdim, ukashartim, from mezuzah to tefillin, just like the chayiv and mezuzah, they should be chayiv and tefillin, kamash malan, they're not. The chayiv in tefillah, they're obligated in tefillah. They're rachamininu, because why are they chayiv in tefillah? Because it's asking for rachamim, and women need to ask for rachamim as much as men need to ask for rachamim. Ma'udatayim, what would you have thought if I didn't teach you that it, because it's rachamim, they have to ask as well? Since it's written in Tehillim that we daven erev in the evening, in the morning, and in the afternoon, I would have said, like, oh, this seems like a time-dependent mitzvah, so women shouldn't be obligated. Kamash malan, I taught you that it's rachamim, and because women need to ask for mercy as well, they are obligated. Umezuzah pshita. Why? What was your chavamim to say that women should be exempt from mezuzah? Ma'aretim olveitkesh libatalmud Torah, kamash malan. Because mezuzah is, it has a hekesh to Talmud Torah, as it's written, v'lamadatem otam et b'neichem, you teach your children, v'samech le'v'katavtem, and right next to it, it's written, v'katavtem. So because of the juxtaposition between Talmud Torah and mezuzah, I would have assumed that just like they're exempt from Talmud Torah, maybe they're also exempt from mezuzah. So I should teach that mezuzah is they're obligated. U'brikar mazon, right, and benching. Pshita, ma'aretema, obviously they're chayav in benching. Hoi v'chtiv, b'teit Hashem lechem be'erev basar lechol v'lechem b'boker, lechem be'erev basar lechol v'lechem b'boker lisova. Because it's written that Kadosh Baruch Hu will give you in the evening meat to eat and in the morning bread to satiate yourself, I would have thought that erev evening morning, this sounds like a mitzvah d'aseisha as man grama, and they're potter. Kamash malan, they're actually chayav. Amar avada barava, nashim chayavad b'kiddush hayom. Devar Torah. Women are obligated in kiddush for Shabbat. That is from the Torah. Amar mitzvah d'aseisha as man grama. Who? But wait, it's time. It's a positive time to be a mitzvah. Ve'kol mitzvah d'aseisha as man grama, nashim p'turah. Any time positive time dependent mitzvah, and a woman is potter. Amar raya midera banan. Amar raya says, no, it must be midera banan that they're chayav. Amar le rabba v'ad devar Torah. We just said it was from the Torah that they're chayav. Gamar. And furthermore, ki mitzvah seshen nichayvinu b'derabanan. Okay, even if it is a derabanan, are you suggesting that the rabbis came along and obligated all women in the mitzvah that they're exempt from the Torah? Meaning, even inachinami, maybe it is derabanan, but like, so what? Do you have a source that the rabbis obligated them? Are you suggesting that all the things that the Torah exempted them from, the rabbis just came along and obligated them from? What's your proof? How do you know? Elam rava amar kras zachor v'shamar. No, because the Torah in Yitro says Zachor Yom Shabbat Lakocho, and in Vet Chanan in the repetition of the Eseret Dibur it says Shamor Yom Shabbat Lakocho, and Chazal teach us that they were actually said in the same iteration by Kadosh Baruch Hu, but Shamor was repeated afterward because you couldn't distinguish between the Zachor and the Shamor, right? So because they were said in one iteration, that was to equate one to the other. Kol Sheyesh Bashira Yesh Beschira. So anyone who was obligated in Shmira, which is a reference to the negative, to the Isurim that you cannot do on Shabbat, like the Melachot, Yesh Beschira is obligated in the positive commandments. On Shabbat, like Kiddush. Right? And these women are obligated in the negative commandments. Women are not allowed to do malacha on Shabbat. They're absolutely obligated, and therefore they're also obligated in the positive commandments, like making Kiddush. And that is a Torah level obligation. Are women chayav in Birkat HaMazon at their right level or their rabbanan level? What's the practical difference here? Can they be motzi other people? Can they bench on someone else's behalf? Can they be motzi them their obligation? So if you want to say that that they're obligated at their right to level, then they can be motzi anyone because everyone's obligated on the same level. Right? But if you want to say, no, this is the rabbanon, okay, so then it's like they're not obligated on a Torah level at all, because and if they're not obligated, they certainly can't fulfill the obligation for other people. Right, so what's the law? Are they obligated at their right to level, and they can fulfill other people's obligation for them, or are they obligated at their abundant level, and they can't? Tashma, let's learn from the following proof. Bemet amru, by the way, means this halacha l'moshe Sinai. Ben mevarech le'aviv, ve'eved mevarech l'rabo. Right, that a son is allowed to make a brikah mazon on behalf of his father, and a slave is allowed to make a brikah mazon on behalf of his master. Ve'isha mevarech le'bala, and a woman is allowed to make a brikah mazon on behalf of her husband. Aval amru chachamim tavo me'ara. Right, but it's not good practice. A curse should be upon those who let their son and their wife exempt them from their obligation of saying Birkat HaMazon. You should say it by yourself. So, okay, so if you want to say that they're obligated at their right to level, that women are obligated at their right to level, I get it. They're obligated at their right to, you're obligated at their right to, and so they can be motzi, your obligation. It's perfectly logical. If they're only obligated at their rabbanon level, how do you expect women to exempt the men from their obligation? They're only obligated to their rabbanon level. They're not really obligated by the Torah. Torah, they can't exempt the man from the obligation. But wait a second, we also thought that a katan was allowed to exempt his father from it. And vadai, everyone would agree that a katan is only obligated to Rabbanon. So what proof do you even have here? Because even a katan is allowed to, and they're definitely obligated to Rabbanon. Rather, what are we dealing with here? Where the person himself only ate a shir derabanan, right? Meaning, on a deoraita level, you don't have to make a birkat hamazon when you're satiated. But how do we practice? Even if you ate an olive size, the size of an olive, you make a birkat hamazon. But if you ate an olive size and you're not satiated, then you're chayv in birkat hamazon derabanan and not deoraita. So if you're only chayv in birkat hamazon derabanan, then a katan can be motzi you, because you're only chayav midirabanan, you're not chayav deoraita. A fascinating concept. We don't have any time to talk about how that works. Darash Rav Avira de Zimnin Amar le Mishmei de Re'ami v'Zimnin Amar le Mishmei de Re'asi. So some say this in the name of Rabbi Ashi, and some say this in the name of Rabbi Ami. Amru Malachei Sharei Lefinei Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right, so the guardian angel said before Kodesh Baruch Hu, this is a very, very beautiful line. Ribbono shel Olam, master of the universe, Ketuv b'Torah Tcha, it's written in your Torah, Asher lo yisapanim lo yikach shochad. Right, that you're not allowed to show favoritism, and you're not to take bribes, but don't you show favoritism to Klal Yisrael? Dichtiv Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows favoritism to Klal Yisrael. Amar lehem v'chi lo asa panim l'Yisrael? What's the havamina? That I wouldn't show favoritism to Klal Yisrael? Shekatavti lehem b'Torah v'achalta v'sevatu v'arachta, that I wrote them in my Torah, that they only have to make a bracha achrona if they're satiated at Hashem Elokecha. That's when you have to bless your God. V'hem medachti mal atzman ad kezayit v'ad kezibetza. Right? And they make a bracha even if they've had a kazayit or a kabetza, depending on your shita. So they go lifnim mishurat adin for me. They go beyond the letter of the law to thank me. I didn't ask them to do that, but they're doing it anyway to show their appreciation. How could I not go beyond the letter of the law to them?